What's up? What's up? It's the After the Snow podcast. I'm your co-host, Dave Mays, coming to you live from Chi-Town, and my partner, Freeway Ricky Ross.
You already know. What up, Dave?
What's the word? What's the word, Rick? Where you at?
I'm in L.A., man. That backdrop looked like a picture, man.
Oh, man. Thank you. Thank you. Yes, it gets nice when we get the sunset look when we record in the evening like this, man. It gets some beautiful sunset.
I need to be in Chicago today. Was it hot today?
It was up in around the 80s. It wasn't too crazy. But, you know, like, especially down here, like, we get so much nice breezes coming off the lake, you know, all through downtown and everything. And it's nice, man. It's really beautiful here.
Yeah, it was a beautiful day here, too. We was about 76, 77 with a little breeze. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it was like lovely here, man. Like one of those dream days, you know, that come once in every 3 or 4 years. So,
oh, man. Nice. What'd you do? I know you're out on the tennis court. I seen you earlier working with the kids. But what else you get into? Anything?
What else I do today, man? I made a delivery today of my weed. You know, Ross Runtz. You know, we got the Ross Runtz out. I'm thinking about changing that name though, man. I was thinking Ross Runtz is cool, but then I was saying the Ricky Ross Runtz sound even better. What you think?
Yeah, Triple R, Ricky Ross Runtz. Yeah.
And I got the word from the city. I can go ahead and do my paperwork, open up my dispensary. So I'm stoked about that. You know, right now, man, I'm just riding the wave, you know, like just having a ball, man. Life is good.
Good stuff.
Hard work pay off.
Absolutely. Gotta keep at it.
On my way to Boston, too. Your old stomping ground.
Oh, yeah? Out to the Bean? What's going on out there?
Well, you know, my brand is out there, but I'm going out there for a speaking engagement. I'm going to be doing a couple speaking engagements with some nonprofits, but I'm also going to drop by a couple dispensaries that carry my product and, you know, holler at them and show some appreciation of them actually carrying my product. Because, you know, here in L.A., it's really tough, man. For black products to get in stores, you know, they just not carrying our products. And I won't say that it's all racism, you know, some of it's economics, you know, because the guys with the big money, they buy shelf space, just like in, you know, in supermarkets, you know, the big brands buy the best shelf space.
Man, it don't make no sense. I mean, you know what I mean? Like there's so many, you know, black folks that got victimized by the drug laws for weed and, you know, all the other problems and systemic racist, you know, things that's been, you know, shown to the world, but then they'll go right back in, legalize weed and you have to deal
lock them
with
out.
The kind of stuff you're talking about, man.
Lock them out. They call it lock it out. Well, they don't have to call it racism no more. It's economics now. You know, you can't afford it.
Yeah.
You know, so just another form, you know.
Yeah. But, we're
going to fight through. They got one.
Exactly. We're going to break.
They got one who don't care about having no money. You know what I'm saying? I like fighting through without no money. I like going against the odds. So, I'm up against it. And you know, you went up against all the big publishing companies and everybody. So
you know how tough that again, right now. You know how many people's all these companies putting hundreds of millions into podcasting, Spotify and Apple and Comcast. I mean, all these people pouring money into the podcast game. So, you know, there's heavy competition, but they're not doing what we're doing, you know, and how we're doing it. And that's going to make all the difference. So
no doubt. Shout out to Bill Bellamy, was on Breakfast Club. You know what I'm saying? Another one of the family members, you know, our family growing, man. We got people with clout too.
Exactly, man. Shout out to Bill, man. He's an incredible talent. Hilarious, but he's a hip hop guy, you know, for years. He's hip hop to the bone. So, you know, that's what makes him such a great, you know, asset in the breakbeat family, and me and him been spending a lot of time, you know, just talking about the vision of the platform and what we can accomplish, you know, to do for the culture, really, and bringing new important voices and perspectives and information, you know, and getting it out to the people. So, Bill had a great look. They had him up on the Breakfast Club. Shout out to the Breakfast Club, Angela Yee, DJ Envy, and Charlamagne for having Bill up there. And
And I've been trying to get on that thing, man, since they had the rapper on there. And he talked all that junk about me. I've been trying to get on there and rebut all of his false statements. You know what I'm saying? But so far, I haven't been able to do that.
That's crazy, man. I got to talk to I'm gonna talk to our guy Amir. You know, has been helping us get all this stuff set up. I know he had talked to them, you know, when we first launched our podcast earlier this year. I know you did, you know, you did Ebro, but you didn't do Breakfast Club. I got to say.
No, we did a lot. He had me doing a lot of stuff, you know, places that I had never been before. So that was good, you know, to get to talk to some new people. Because you get tired of talking about the same, you know, they ask you the same story over and over again. You'd be like, come on, man, I already answered that. Let's do something new, you know?
Right. So, well, cool, man. Let's if you don't have anything else you want to cover, let's jump into Snowfall season 2, episode 3.
That's what we're here for.
All right, so I want to get into the title of the episode. Usually we mention it, but this one is a little more to explain, I guess, about it. So the title of the episode is Prometheus Rising. So, of course, I had to go look up Prometheus. I knew, you know, he was like a Greek god or something like that.
I'm glad you did, because I wouldn't know what it was.
So Prometheus was a Greek god, like the god of fire. And he basically stole fire and gave it to mankind through technology, knowledge, introducing civilization into human existence, that type of thing. And then he was tortured for doing that. But when I read a little bit more into it, I saw a parallel where his story is basically a story saying that, like, you know, if you want to improve things in our world and make it better, you know, that can also end in tragedy. You know, which is him being tortured for what he did to try to help, you know, civilization. But so what I got from that was like, kind of like, you know, the means to an end type of thing going on here, where it's like, you know, this crack is taking off and, you know, there's, you know, potential and obviously damage to the community that begins to occur and gets, you know, worse, as we've learned, you know, looking back in retrospect. You know, but, you know, there's a greater picture, like, you know, they're trying to do this. They still have goals and they're up against, you know, the poverty and all the other obstacles of trying to make it out of South Central at that time in the 80s. So that's what I got out of the title, Prometheus Rising. I don't know what you think.
I don't know that. I mean, that's interesting, you know, that you say that. And you know, we used to kind of say when we were in the game, like when you strike a spot up, you set it on fire, you know, like you lit that spot up, you know, a lot of people was coming, you know, they was checking in, you know, spending that money. So, it kind of goes together. I kind of get the picture now that you explained it to me, what it means.
Right. Yeah. They you know, some of their titles, they put some real thought into, you know, some of them aren't as deep as that, but, there are some interesting ones. So, let's talk about the episode. It's, you know, it's probably not the most excitement, but there are some interesting a lot of interesting twists and turns that are taking place. It starts off with Franklin. You know, he was in bed with the girl next door, Melody. She finds his gun when he's in the bathroom. And he tells her, you know, yeah, that's Jerome's idea for me to be careful. And, you know, she's worrying about him and trying to understand what kind of danger he's in. So that's the first scene. And then they show Teddy and his brother Matt. They're on the plane flying to Columbia, having a good old time and telling jokes and, you know, not really sure what they're getting into, which we'll see in this episode as well. So that's kind of their storyline.
That was the most exciting part of the show to me, with the, of this particular show, you know, was Teddy and his brother sitting there with the cartel, and they going back and forth about whose country is a piece of shit and whose country is not a piece of shit and so forth.
Right.
To see Teddy and him still stand up under that type of pressure was to me was interesting. You know, most people would fold under that kind of pressure.
Yeah, Teddy. Teddy is showing his his courageous side, I guess, and he tries talking shit while he's got, you know, like 20 armed guys surrounding him and his brother, and they kind of beat him up a little bit because he's talking back to them and he's impatient. They have that conversation where the Colombian guys are basically talking shit about America. And, again, this is where this Snowfall show gets into putting out, you know, some perspectives that I think are valuable and needed to, you know, be understood more by the mainstream. So yeah, one of the Colombians is like, yeah, you know, your country murdered the Indians, you chained the blacks, you pissed on the Vatos. So, you know, basically fuck America. Like, you know, don't come down here talking about, you know, talking shit about Colombia and, you know, when your country did all this kind of stuff. So yeah, that was interesting. And like I said, that's the type of perspective that, you know, is important that it's shared in a mainstream way. I still think that, you know, a lot of people just can't put things in perspective, you know, like that, in understanding the way of the world today and how it's all, you know, it's all connected and, you know, the history of all this stuff here.
I can definitely relate to those statements because for me, you know, I know that I have lived the Black American dream, you know, from going to prison, you know, in the court system, you know, having literally an all white jury, one Hispanic person, you know, no blacks, which was heartbreaking. You know what I'm saying? You when you think a jury of your peers, you would think that you would definitely have somebody on there that that resemble yourself. But that wasn't the case. I've experienced black and white bathrooms, you know, in my lifetime. You know, I've been told, hey, you can't use that bathroom because of your color of your skin. Wow, man. It's just so many things that we have had to experience in this country that I know when blacks saw that, when they saw that scene, they were like, yeah, you're right. You know, you're right for telling Teddy, because, you know, sometimes that there's things that people want to say and they don't have the courage or the words to put it in. But when they see somebody else express that feeling that they have, you know, they're going, yeah, right on, black power.
Yeah.
So I can definitely relate to that scene, you know, with kudos for the Colombians and the Mexican cartels.
Yes. So, Yeah, I mean, that's pretty much Teddy's storyline for the episode, is his trip down there. The one last part about it that I thought was funny, after they give that whole thing about how terrible America is, then they're like sitting down when he finally gets to meet with the main dudes, and they're, you know, chopping it up, trying to get everything worked out. They're like, okay, but we need a few extra favors. We need 25 copies of Michael Jackson's Thriller album. We need some Cabbage Patch dolls, some sheepskin condoms, and those Christmas lights. Like, so it's like, on the one hand, you're talking shit about America, but then the next thing is you want all these material items from America and American culture. So they balance it with that, I guess.
Yeah, I guess so. But it's also making another statement that, you know, America has the ability to be, you know, one of the greatest countries ever, you know, if it can contain itself and contain its racism and its bias, you know, for others.
That's right. I wholeheartedly agree. And I believe we can get there. You know, it's been a long road, but I believe we can get there with the right things happening. So that's kind of Teddy and his brother. They fly back and they have some more, you know, some more conversations about everything. His brother doesn't like, you know, Teddy thinking he should make all the decisions. He's like, you damn near just almost got us killed. I'm the one that got us out of everything. So, you know, we promised them visas, and Teddy's got to figure out how he's going to get visas for them as well, now that he supposedly don't have his government hookup like he used to.
Well, you know, that kind of relates to my case too. You know, in my case, they forged my informant's green card. They gave him an illegal green card. Yeah. Huh. So that kind of, you know, not really related, but kind of, you know, just surfacing, you know, where because they couldn't come out and say, you know, well, they could have came and said that the INS agent cooperated with the CIA agent and gave him a fake green card, you know. That would have been too obvious, I guess.
Right. Interesting.
But, yeah, you know, we had like that situation in our thing, and they didn't fire the INS agent for doing it, but they definitely promoted him, so he can't issue our green cards anymore. He wasn't trustworthy to handle the green card issue. He might have been taking the pay.
Right.
We don't know how many green cards he had issued out illegally.
So the other thing that's going on this episode is, you know, dealing with the two guys, the young dealers on the street over there in the Mexican neighborhood that got killed, stabbed up by one of the, you know, the Mexican cartel guys. And, you know, Kevin finds out about it. It's his cousin, you know, that he's very close to, is one of the ones that got killed. He's flipping out. He wants to take revenge immediately. He gets Leon and Jerome all, you know, gassed up, and they load up the car with guns and they head over there, and nobody knows where Franklin is yet. You know, fuck it, we got to do this. Fuck Franklin. And luckily, Louis hooks up with Franklin and brings him over there, and Franklin shuts down their play that they were trying to make. Just, you know, what could have ended up them just randomly shooting up a bunch of people in the Mexican neighborhood, you know, as a way of trying to get back for what happened to them or to their, you know, to their people.
Yeah, innocent people would have got killed. Lucky Louis had the cool head to get that squashed. I can remember incidents, you know, similar, not exactly like that, but, you know, incidents where a lot of people could have got hurt. Let me say that. So somebody got to have a cool head. It was good that Franklin was even able to calm him down. You know, I'm surprised that that they took to his word so easily. When I try to cool my guys down, it was a lot harder than that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, Kev is the one that he hasn't been able to quiet down. We see them, you know, at odds throughout the rest of the episode. But it was interesting to see. I mean, Jerome kind of, you know, took a little responsibility for messing up. But really, Leon was the one who came up to Franklin at one point and said, hey, man, you know, I screwed up. I should have never gotten that car. I shouldn't have, you know, allowed all this to happen. You were right in how you handled it. You shouldn't feel bad. Kev was out of line. And, you know, that was interesting. Jerome, Franklin had to scream on him because, you know, when they're back at the house and it's all, you know, everybody's, you know, talking, you know, really arguing about the situation. And it comes out that these were the two guys dealing at Pico Union. Franklin's like, I thought we said don't sell in that Mexican neighborhood. And Jerome's like, well, I told him not to, but I can't, you know. And Franklin's like, no, buddy, like, you got to, if we tell somebody that they got to do something, we need to make sure they follow the rules and, you know, no excuses type of thing. So he was really on Jerome about that.
Yeah, that was, you know, that was interesting, but to me it was, kind of slow for the movie. You know, it slowed it down. It wasn't moving at a pace that I would have liked for it to move to. You know, I thought it was a lot more things that could have been added in there that would have kept it going strong. But, you know, that's my opinion.
Well, you know what it made me think about, you know, what when I took a step back and just kind of thought about the episode as a whole, you know, you're seeing Franklin kind of, you know, emerging to another level of leadership in building this organization.
Awesome.
And having to come in and shut that down, having to put people in their place, having to, you know, do different things. And, you know, that made me start thinking about like stuff I know I went through and I'm sure you went through, like, you know, becoming a boss, how you deal with business partners, how you deal with your employees
and family members. Which are some of the toughest.
Yeah, the challenges within all of those. Because, you know, I've dealt with that my whole career is, you know, how to manage employees, how to manage, you know, your relationships with your partners or people that you're doing business with and how, you know, difficult that can be, challenging that can be.
Can you separate family from business? That's one of the toughest things that I've had to deal with is people understanding because you make a business decision, it's not a family decision. You know, a lot of times you make a call and you know, it's against that person and they take it as if it was a call against the family.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I know you've been through that too.
Definitely.
I'm going through that right now, today, you know, having to make decisions that are not favorable to the family. You know, the family disagrees with it. But at the same time, you know that this decision is going to help the business.
Yeah.
And, you know, sometimes it looks like you might be turning your back on the family.
Yeah. Yeah. And then just dealing with, you know, how do you keep people motivated within your organization? How do you balance, you know, between encouraging them, but also, you know, kind of making sure that things are getting done right and everything's, you know, being thorough. Because you got, you know, to succeed in business, you got to be thorough. You got to be thorough if you want to really succeed in a big way and in the long run. You know, it's very hard to be successful and have a lot of loose ends and cutting corners. You know, you can do that for only but so long. At least in my experience, I found, you know, you got to be really on top of that. And the people.
It all catches up. If you're cutting corners, it's going to catch up. Yeah. You know, you can only hide so long, you know. They say what's in the dark will come to the light. So You're absolutely correct. You can't cut corners. You can't be hiding behind the desk or, you know, ducking out, you know, when the boss comes. All that stuff eventually comes to a head, and everybody's going to see you for what it is.
So to just kind of get into what happens in the last part of the episode, you know, the killing of the guys by the Mexicans opens the door for Franklin to reach out to Lucia, because we remember, like last episode, Lucia had discovered the crack rock that the guys were selling out there in the Mexican neighborhood. She came back around, bought it all out, gave them her card. She's trying to find out how to get this crack rock so she can broker it into all the Mexican territories with the people that she's been linking up with, these, you know, heads of these Mexican gangs and cartels there. So when they put that together, that this is where it happened, Franklin's like, well, man, you know, you didn't think to call, you know, this person, like she probably knows what's going on. And he makes the call, and they agree to set up a meeting in the park. I'm trying to remember the name of the park. They said, see if you knew the park. I thought I wrote it down. I can't find it. But in any event, they agree to meet up in the park. And so Franklin, Jerome, Kev, and Leon head out to the park, and Lucia and Oso show up. And of course, Franklin and Leon recognize Oso from seeing him at the wrestling. And of course, Franklin had run into Oso when he was out there getting, you know, getting cornered killed. Yes, yes.
About to be executed.
Has saved his ass. But Franklin and Lucia go have a conversation. Franklin's trying to get information on who's responsible for killing, you know, his family members or Kev's family members, and, you know, wants to know what's going to be done to fix it. She's basically telling him, the guy who did it is like one of the most powerful people in the city, and you'll have, you know, all hell will break loose if you try to do something. But I'll try to find out, you know, more specifics, but mainly she wants to make a deal with him on buying the crack rock, or I guess eventually trying to figure out how to make it herself. But it seems like,
know,
in the beginning,
what I was wondering is how would she have known who committed the murder? I mean, I do know that she told him that they were down there selling, but does that alone show evidence of her knowing who did it?
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's true. But she did say she didn't really know. She probably knows that's his territory, because she said, I'm going to look into it and try to find out more details. So maybe she had an idea, but was going to make a couple calls to, you know, to really check it out and find out what happened, which I think she does later when she comes back to him, is kind of telling him, oh, you know, they didn't get castrated, because, you know, they're hearing, Franklin and Kevin, them are hearing that they castrated them. And, you know, this was, you know, just crazy. And she's saying that didn't happen. But nevertheless, this is what opens up the connection now between Lucia and Oso and Franklin to start doing business together. So, you know, we're going to see where that leads. Meanwhile, go ahead.
I guess that they also show how small the drug circle was, you know, that these are really the only two people that we know in LA that's inside the drug business, and now they bumped heads, you know, for whatever reason it was. They're now acquainted with each other. So mm-hmm. the drugs brought them together. Mm-hmm. I would say.
Mm-hmm. Pedro's back. You know, we saw that last episode, and now he's decided he wants to hang around. He wants to be part of the business, and he's got this new woman he's about to marry. You know, Lucia has a guy who's been investigating, trying to find Pedro for all these months. And she's talking to him and he's telling her, well, yeah, Pedro, you know, she's like, well, how did you get away? You found out he was just in Texas and, you know, Arizona. He was all right around here and you couldn't find him all this time. Oh, you know, he was really smart. He only used cash. And he's telling Lucia that he checked out the girlfriend and got her background. And, you know, she's basically nobody. You know, I think there's still a lot of concern about that. Also goes to meet someone. I was trying to figure out, was it like a palm reader type of woman? Remember, he goes to see the woman, or was it a family member that's kind of giving him this advice about what's going on with, you know, who to be worried about and, you know, all that kind of thing. That was an interesting scene.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, a lot of Hispanic people, they use, fortune tellers, I guess it is, or palm readers, card readers, to help them make decisions. I know a lot of the cartel members also use that type of system to help them make their decisions. My mom used to use them as well. You know, I've been to those type of people. My mom them call them prophesiders. You know, they can prophesize your future, what they see coming to you. And, mm-hmm. you know, it's amazing. Sometimes those people are right. You know, I've been read a few times, you know, and what they said came true.
Interesting. I've never really sat through one of those, but, you know, right.
I don't know. I guess there's some talents that some people have. It's almost like they read your mind almost, you know, they can just sit there and just pick you apart.
Yeah. The last kind of theme that I noticed that came out in a couple parts of this episode was just, you know, the idea of young men growing up without fathers. Because first it comes up, I think, when Leon and Franklin are talking about Kevin, and Leon said something like, yeah, well, you know, Kev didn't grow up with, you know, a dad, and he's a little, you know, off sometimes, or whatever he was saying. And then Franklin was like, but neither did you. And look how, you know, look at you. And then it also came up when Oso and Lucia were talking about, things. And, you know, they were talking about like the killing of those kids and the guy that did it. And I guess that guy's a bad guy. And there was some mention within there about like, you know, those kind of men are just in this for the glory. And, you know, but, you know, Lucia's like, but yeah, they need to be teaching kids to grow up as fathers and not killers, was kind of the words that she used. So to me, those are similar kind of storylines in this episode, trying to bring out, you know, bring up this idea that, you know, growing up without a strong father figure can have, you know, a detrimental effect.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I would attest to that as well. It was only, I think, two of us that grew up in our group that had fathers, you know, still living in the house. And, amazing. Neither one of those guys went to prison for a long time. I don't know what that attributes to. You know, was it the father being there, or you know, having the ability to put their money in the right place, you know, at the right time, you know, having somebody to guide them. But, you know, so many things that a father would do for a son that I really had to learn on the streets, you know, from somebody that I didn't know, you know, and a lot of times those people take advantage of you. You know, they don't have your best interests at heart. They're in it for your money. And that's it.
Yeah. Yeah. I've glossed over it, but that scene where Franklin slaps Kevin and Kev pulls a gun out on him, I thought we should at least just touch on that. That was kind of wild. What'd you think of that?
Yeah. Wow, it was wild. I mean, it wouldn't have been something I would have did as a boss, you know. We had pretty much, I felt they had already squashed the drive-by situation. Kev was still venting, and I felt that he should have been allowed to vent as long as he didn't take any actions. And at that time, I didn't see him ready or willing to take any action right then and there. I mean, he was still talking, you know, crazy, but I don't know if a slap was the appropriate thing to do at that time.
Right.
And Franklin's lucky he didn't get shot. You know, you slap the wrong guy, and they kill you.
Yeah. Well, before we wrap, the very, very last scene of the episode, they show Franklin's dad. They showed him in the beginning and then right at the end again, you know, that he's out on the street, he's homeless. And I guess he's living where a bunch of homeless people were. It looks like kind of under a freeway, underpass type of thing. And the police are lining up to just, you know, go in there and throw these homeless people out, beat them up, tear their stuff down, burn their stuff up. I mean, it was pretty nasty, graphic scene at the very end. So I wanted to get your take on that and just, you know, your recollections of, you know, the use of this kind of heavy police force back in the day.
Well, you know what? I didn't really remember the homeless population. You know, we had Skid Row at that time, but it wasn't nowhere near like it is right now. You know, it was a sector of town where people, you know, hung out around the bus station that was homeless. And I know at those places they sold a lot of cocaine, heroin, pills. You know, it was kind of like a hot spot for if you wanted to sell some drugs. But I never knew the cops to attack them like they do right now. You know, now they come out with these bulldozers and an army, you know, a force of police officers, and they literally tear these tents down and, you know, houses made out of scrap wood and tires and couches and mattresses, just whatever these people can scrap together. They make houses out of them. And it's an eyesore for the community. You know, I mean, they have one right here at the edge of my street, you know, and even though I feel sorry for the homeless, you know, nobody wants, you know, that type of activity right on their own street.
Yeah. All right. Well, this was a recap and analysis of Snowfall Season 2, Episode 3, as part of, you know, the Weekly After the Snow podcast that we host here. I'm Dave Mays, and I got Freeway Rick Ross, my partner in this, you know, in this venture and this journey we're on after the snow. And we want to thank you guys for checking us out. You can, you know, go to the Breakbeat Media YouTube and watch us if you're listening on any of the podcast apps. You can listen to us, Apple, Spotify, and so on down the line. Check us out every week.
No doubt. Hopefully next week going to be better, more exciting, more action, because I know that's what you guys are looking for, and we're going to break it down for you.
That's what's up.
Hey, Dave, thank you again, as always.
Yeah. Thank you, Rick, man. Appreciate you.